And our swimmers now, have raised over £55 million for charity.
Wow.
So it's been the most stunning success. But beyond that, it's driven more and more people to swim regularly during the winter period. So it supports our pools and backs them up and makes it, it's a great exercise to keep swimming pools with healthy numbers during the winter.
Welcome to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast, where we aim to give swimming the coverage and publicity it deserves. Every week, we celebrate the sport we love with amazing special guests and topics from around the swimming pool. And now, here are your hosts, Scott and Dan.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott, and back with me, as always, is my good friend, Dan. And on this week's show, we are talking swimathon.
Yeah, this week's topic is something I've been wanting to talk about on a podcast ever since we started Propulsion Swimming, actually. And I think Scott will agree with me that I've been pestering him for the last 2 years to try and talk about this subject. This is going to be an awesome episode, to be honest with you. We've got a guest that really is British swimming royalty, and I can't wait to get going.
Yes, Dan is certainly a huge supporter of the event. And believe it or not, 2 years ago, we did actually record an episode with a swimathon ambassador named Laura, only for COVID to hit a week later and to kind of scupper that whole episode as planned. But for those who don't know, swimathon is an annual fundraising swim that takes place in participating swimming pools across the UK and is considered to be the world's largest swimming fundraising event. So to help talk us through the event, we are joined by the 1980 100 meter breaststroke gold medalist and the president of swimathon, Duncan Goodhue. Duncan, thanks so much for coming on to the podcast this week. How are things with you?
Well, it's just great to be on with you talking swimming. You can't get enough of that, can you?
No,
and to talk swimathon too, it's just been a fantastic journey, swimathon, and it's helped so many people. So really excited about talking about it and explaining some of the things that go on in the pool around you.
Yes, definitely. So we are going to talk all things swimathon, but as we've got you on, we can't not talk a little bit about your swimming career to start with. So as we said, you were the 1980s Olympic gold medalist. Swimming has changed a lot since the 1980s. How do you think it's personally changed?
Well, it's changed massively, but it's not changed at all, because at the end of the day, it's one of the most objective sports you can take part in. You know how many lengths you're going to swim. You know how many tiles you're going to pass by to get there. And it's down to, 100th of a second. And you're in your own lane. And when you add that up, it's one of the purest sports you can take part in. And it doesn't lie to you. It's just beautiful in that purity. And when you go through that excellence journey, whether it's from age group onwards, it's just such an adventure of self-discovery and getting to know people and understanding, I suppose, how things work.
How has the training changed? Do you still swim, actually?
Yeah, a good day is a one swim day. A great day is a two swim day. And I'm a crazy. I do open water swimming. I swim regularly at the Serpentine in London, in the lake there at Hyde Park, through the winter. They keep on telling me how great it is. I just don't get it. But I still go in there. You can get a hell of a buzz out of it. But going back to the question about how it's changed, I think the knowledge of the coaching has changed tremendously. And I always remember, the fantastic David Haller. And I went to go and see him one time. David Davis was training. And he was just bouncing up and down the pool at such pace. So I said, how does he do that? And he said, well, Duncan, in your day, we didn't understand about rest. And we didn't understand by resting swimmers, you get fitter. And I said, oh, that's great, David. Thanks. So what you're saying is, David Davis is on the ninth floor of fitness and I never got off the ground and was tired all the time. So I think we did a huge amount of training, but very different training to what people do now. Did a lot of weights, particularly in America, for short course yards, it was all about, for me, getting the margins and the videos coaches can get, and the analysis and the understanding of the mechanics has improved tremendously. And of course, the biggest thing of all is the funding. Back in my day, I got a Sports Aid Foundation grant, and that was it. It was all done under my own steam. So that the support mechanisms are in place once you get your head above the parapet a bit.
It's interesting you say about Dave Haller. That was Dan's old coach.
It was, yeah. It was for 2 years when I went to Cardiff, yeah. He was, yeah. We worked hard, but we also rested quite hard as well. So, yeah.
Well, I always remember lovely things he used to say is we used to rest very a huge amount of time, and particularly for me, because I got so tired. And I'd rest 7-8 weeks going into a competition. And he was great because he'd tell you to save it and you'd get out, you know, and the whole concept of saving it during a rest, you know, you were so feeling so good, you wanted to do more, and you're like, oh, Duncan, get out, save it. And it's a great, you know, psychological ploy to improve the chances of you succeeding.
Definitely. Breaststroke has always seemed to be a very strong stroke in the UK. Why do you reckon that is? Do you think you kind of laid the foundation for that almost, or is it almost ingrained within British swimming?
Well, American coach that I had thought it was because we walk so far, but I think that was just nonsense. But going back to Captain Webb, you know, we've had a history of breaststroke, and during the 60s, you had Anita Longsborough. And so there's a kind of a breaststroke culture in the country. David Wilkie broke through. And at the time, you know, there was David Wilkie, Paul Naseby, and David Lee, one other. Ooh, sorry, whoever it was. And I came up on their ankles. And, I didn't swim for Great Britain until I was 19 years old. And my first official international meet was the Olympic Games in Montreal. And the reason for that was, you know, we pretty much had the three fastest breaststrokers in the world at the time. So, you know, I was fortunate to come up, you know, in that environment where success was normal in the pool in breaststroke. And I trained with Maggie Kelly too, and she was just unbelievably fast. And that was a gold medal that sadly wasn't won, but it should have been. She got silver instead. I think the culture of breaststroke is so much here in this country. And what a great stroke.
Well, I was going to ask you, what are your thoughts on how the stroke has changed over the years? You take a look at Adam Peaty, and he's very much higher in the water, whereas it used to be very flat. What's your thinking?
Well, I mean, it's a different stroke because in my day, you had to keep your head above the water. And, you know, you had particularly East Germans, the girls, they put their hair up underneath their hat. So when they went down, they could go down deeper without breaking the rule. So, you know, the second you can actually dip your head down, first of all, you kind of break the surface friction for a second, which gives you an advantage. But the second part of it is you get a slight undulation in the stroke, which gives you, it's not a kick, because otherwise you'd be disqualified, but it's almost a kick upwards that propels you forward. And the final bit was when we pushed off the wall, you had to be like a plank. And now you're allowed a huge undulation.
Yeah.
So, you know, the times just dropped massively from when I swam. And part of that is a change of stroke. And, of course, the rest is they're better than I was. They train harder. So, but it's I think a lot of what restricts us is mental. You know, we've evolved to where we are. And we haven't yet evolved to polished chairs. We're physical. We're governed by our evolution. And if you talk to if you're told some really, really bad news, you kind of go into shock. A person will go into shock. And one of the things they'll say is, "Who, me? Why me? Why me?" And those two comments are really, really powerful. Because they protect us against all the bad that can go wrong. But equally, they protect you about something you're not actually ready for. And most of my journey in the latter part of my career was getting over who me, why me. Because I was swimming in American Nationals, which was a meet that had more... Well, it was more competitive than the Olympic Games at the time because American men's team had, sometimes four or five of the top people, swimmers in the world. And I was ahead of the two world record holders who'd been swapping world records. And I was nobody from nowhere. And I came up to breathe and I was still 18 at the time. And I heard my name mentioned on the intercom. At that point, I realized I was ahead of the two gods of my sport. You know, the lions were there, and it was David Wilkie and John Henkin. I remember saying, "Who, me?" You know, I'm from Yapton, West Sussex, you know. And the whole thing fell to pieces. And I suppose the way I think of it is that, you know, if back in the day when we were hunter-gatherers, if there was a nasty, fierce beast you were trying to kill, you wouldn't arrive in front of the tribe, the pack. You'd arrive at the same time or just behind, because you didn't want to be the first one to get eaten. So I think we do have a kind of defense mechanism. And the question I ask, you know, I'd ask any swimmer is, what are you doing to normalize it? You know, winning a gold medal should be getting up in the morning and going and winning a gold medal as if you've been, you know, got up in the morning to shave. It's just so normal to you that it just happens. It wasn't that easy to do, I must say. And I nearly blew it anyway. But that's the theory.
So we got you on to talk about swimathon. Let's get on to the main topic then. So what is swimathon to start with? I know I gave it a bit of an intro, but why don't you give us the president's introduction?
Yeah, I got the whole thing got bigged up. It was fantastic. I mean, it was an event that started in the late 80s, and we'd actually dominated sponsored events in sport as a sport, because every child would do a sponsored swim, and. But it'd get no publicity and it would have no real marketing drivers or anything like that. And a guy that I'd been working with at the London Youth Games, managed to put a pilot on and asked me to get involved 2 years later to try and emulate some of the success of the marathon in the pool. But of course, you can't get 33 or whatever it is, 1,000 people in a swimming pool, might be a bit.
Yeah.
Might be some issues, right? so we did it in a lot of pools, and we had a series of different challenges. And the first one was quite extraordinary. We raised just a startling sum of money back there then in 1988. And we were really fortunate because we had Princess Diana opened it. And it was from then on, it just went crazy. And our swimmers now... you know, have raised over £55 million for charity. Wow. So it's been the most stunning success. But beyond that, it's driven more and more people to swim regularly during the winter period. So it supports our pools and backs them up and makes it, it's a great exercise to keep swimming pools with healthy numbers during the winter. But also, it's got just the most phenomenal stories. You know, I swam with a young lad who was 5 years old. He swam one length. His parents swam 200 lengths. and then there was a farmer and his son, and there was something going on, so I got to talk to them. And it turned out the father had had a heart attack, and he had joined swimathon to recuperate. But really, he had joined swimathon because he wanted his son to swim because he didn't want his son to have a heart attack. And his son was, you know, so wanting his father to get fit again. So there are these extraordinary stories about what goes on in the pool. And it's just largely it's normal people. You know, we do have competitors, swimmers taking a part and doing a little training session. Now, if you want to do a real training session, you join the 30.9, which is 30 kilometers and 900 meters. It's all the events together, and you've got to do it over the event weekend.
Oh, boy.
So we got these various challenges from individual ones. The main one individually is a 1500 and the 5K. And then we've got a whole bunch of team ones, and we've got a 400 meters for starters who can't swim very well. We have my swimathon. So, you know, some people are very shy and they get very, very nervous. And, you know, everybody on this podcast is probably associated with swimming. And, you know, you've been to competitions and you know what the adrenaline buzz. But when you get somebody who's never swum in an event who comes along, I brought my daughter along and she swam in the team, and she brought a friend along as well. And the father was, he was ex-special forces from Norway, and he was really, really nervous. So it shows you a little window that, you know, people can get a real thrill of taking part and get a real squeeze and a sense of achievement, and also raise huge amounts of money for this year is Marie Curie and Cancer Research UK, along with Swimathon Foundation, which if you're interested, I'll tell you more about that.
Yeah, well, that was my next question, actually. What is the importance of raising funds for those charities? Where does that money go exactly?
Well, I think everybody knows Marie Curie and Cancer Research UK. I mean, cancer is pretty much the largest killer in this country, and Cancer Research UK is the leading research institution in this country, finding solutions to cancer, you know, and making a survivability much, much greater, and the treatment not so bad either. So you're not only helping, you know, people who are now, but you're helping, you know, people in the future. And they've got some very, very strong goals about decreasing the rates of cancer massively. Marie Curie is all about hospice care and end-of-life care. And it's something you don't like to think about too much, too. But, you know, how as swimmers, we know how you finish is really important. And you know, what they do is allow people to wind their way off the mortal coil in the most dignified way, in a way that, you know, is right for them. And also offering massive support to all the families, you know, from financial down to nursing care, et cetera, et cetera. And having lost my mother and mother-in-law to cancer, and my mother-in-law decided to go home, to my sister-in-law's house, and my kids were there and everything, and it was about as good as that ending could be. So they do just the most phenomenal work. And then we have the Swanathon Foundation, which some of the clubs will know about that because you might have got a COVID grant from us. And you know, they're really promoting swimming, putting back into our local community, and trying to strengthen swimming as a sport. So it's a real force for good, and something that's been, you know, so large in my life.
Yeah. Do you know what I love most about Swimathon? It's the raising money for charity is amazing, but it's also the effect of you're getting people in the pool, you're getting people swimming, which also helps out the charities because you're encouraging a very active and positive lifestyle.
Absolutely. I mean, the driver for me was getting people swimming. In fact, I'd had a sponsored swim company that we just raised money for charity, but the purpose of the whole thing was to visit as many swimming clubs who wanted a clinic. So I'd do a 2-hour clinic, and we'd have a synchro somebody from a synchro team with us usually as well. And it was just a great way for me to be able to go to as many clubs without them having to pay as well. So it was really useful. It was great.
Yeah. Okay. Can we dive into the challenges? So you've spoken about the mega distance ones, but if there's some nervous swimmers that you've been talking about before, what's the different types of challenges that these swimmers can do?
Well, first of all, we've tried to make it as open to everybody as possible. You know, no excuses, you can take part. So there's an introductional one, which is the 400 meters. And then you've got my swimathon, which is that happens over the end of April through to May. And I think it's the 29th of April to the 15th of May, where you can swim anywhere, any place, any time. And that you know, I alluded it to it earlier. Some people are, you know, a bit worried about going to an event, and they'd rather do it in their own time and space. So it gives them a great way to take part. Mm. And then the challenges mount up on the individual, you know, the 1.5K, the 5K, and then you've got the 30.9 kilometers of all of the events put together. then you have the teams, which is just fantastic. You know, if you're a swimmer and you can't get some of your mates together, you can have a real laugh with that, you know, see who's going to do the fastest time and stuff like that. But again, there's a series of challenges. You know, you have up to five people in a team. Great fun. There are 450 pools taking part, so there'll be one round the corner from you.
Definitely.
I should say that the event weekend is the 6th to the 8th of May, so there's plenty of time to go to swimathon.org and sign.
Duncan's a pro here, he's doing odd job boards. I mean, I think we should definitely take part as a team, Dan. I'm not sure about challenging each other as times, because you're one before with me.
But look, you know, I'm a 100 meters breaststroker, taps and back, and it's over. Mm. And 5,000 meters for me is a long way. Yeah. And every year I'm going, anyway, it doesn't get easier as you get older.
Oh, you don't fancy doing the 30K one then? Don't fancy that at all?
I think that might be, you know, that's the idea of 30K might just do me in.
Well, I'm sure there's plenty of our listeners who are very able swimmers who should definitely give the 30K one a go over a weekend.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, it's amazing the number of swimmers that do it, and they love doing it too, because, you know, they go to different, quite often they'll go to different pools and see different swimmers, and so it's all, you know, to them it's a lot of fun. Yeah, and and they get the medal and that real sense of celebration afterwards.
Achievement, yeah, definitely.
And, great fun.
So you say the festival is on the weekend of the 6th to the 8th of May, which gives people plenty of time to get training for the swimathon. So what are your tips for training and to keep motivated for those who aren't often in a swimming pool?
Well, the first thing is sign up. because the commitment is what it's about. When you commit, then you have
I like that.
To about it. And
half the battle. Yep.
The next thing is, you know, set yourself, you know, a training schedule. And there's plenty of stuff's on online. Hmm. But, you know, the rule of thumb is you get in, you know, you, each time you get in, you kind of swim maybe 10 to 15% further. So you're looking about building stamina. The next thing is intensity. And, you know, all you competitive swimmers know that if you swim at the same speed, you kind of get, you get locked at that same speed. So change the intensity, you know, do some faster lengths or have some sprints at the end. And finally, the old distance per stroke stuff, you know, count the strokes per length and see if you can decrease the strokes per length while still maintaining the pace, you know. And it's amazing how much you can teach yourself what works when you're actually looking for improvements.
Yeah. It's simple when you say it like that.
So easy.
I'm still doing it. I don't watch times quite so much because they are not getting any faster. And I think I might be swimming freestyle about the pace that I kick breaststroke.
That was the best tip I ever got when I left club swimming and went into what I'm now doing, which is open water. It's just ignore the time. And that's why I went to open water, because it's so much easier to not compare yourself.
It's almost two different sports, isn't it? Almost two different sports.
And also, you know, if you're not careful, the counting can get in the way. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some great books written about you know, swimming and the zen of swimming, as it were. And I always feel that swimming is where yoga hits running. You get all the benefits of running, but you get all the zen of yoga too. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid, when we were all kids, we got in the water, and it was just the most magical thing. You know, you're laughing, you're loving it, and absolutely fantastic. You know, you try and get up, and your feet come up, and your nose goes under because you can't use the same strategy in the pool as you can you've been using outside of the pool. And I suppose for me, there was a seminal moment in my career when I stopped counting the lengths, and I started actually looking at how to improve the technique and how to work on bits of the stroke at a time and focus on them. And I usually had little cues. For instance, you know, when I finish my kick, I think about touching the toes together at the end. Because, you know, in breaststroke, it's so easy not to finish the kick. Well, every stroke is the same. And, you know, to bring the heels up behind, I used to kind of touch my heels behind and bring them up. Now, when you're thinking of all that detail, you know, I think people think devil's in the detail. Well, actually, I think the regional saying was an architect who said God is in the detail. Now, you know, you take it religiously or not, it's swimming. You know, as you look for the detail and you think you've got to relax every muscle in your body. Because when you're standing up, you're using 120 muscles or whatever it is. But when you're in the water, all you need is the muscles that you're going to use to swim fast and swim efficiently. And that is a hell of a mental journey, because, you know, we're so geared to keeping balance, you know, on land, etc., that you've always got muscles working. And to turn those off is a real mental exercise that is it's very pure and lovely, actually.
It's difficult to get through it to youngsters about that. Try and be as relaxed as possible, but also swim as fast as you can. It's a difficult one to sort of explain to them. Is it your aim to get the youngsters involved? Because we've seen on the website that that you're offering 50% discount for under 16s. Is that part of your aim as well?
Yeah, I mean, we love getting people involved, and obviously the future of swimming is in the young people. I could have gone into coaching and, you know, I could have gone into other areas of swimming, but, when I retired, If you can say that I ever did retire, because I'm still swimming, I thought what would be really cool was to try and get more people active, particularly swimming. And, you know, as a kid, I was dyslexic. I was in the back of the class. I was drowning in the class. And swimming was the lifeline that saved my life. Well, maybe a bit too dramatic, but anyway, changed my life. That was for sure. And I was just saying to somebody the other day, if you talk to any of my teachers, they'd say, "Oh, the gold medal was really shocking and surprising and everything else." But the fact that Duncan wrote for the Financial Times for a little while was more shocking. But yeah, so and then of course I lost my hair through a fall. So things weren't going great. And swimming was the catalyst. And I suppose I was incredibly fortunate because I had contrast in my life. I knew what wasn't working, and I knew that what was working and was good in my life. And I think I feel sorry for some people who are really good at loads of things, because how did how do you choose which one? So I was, and I had some great people. I mean, that really made a difference.
Yeah, I think it's hugely important that youngsters get involved in swimming. Me and Dan can testify that essentially we wouldn't be where we are in our lives without the sport. And we are in two very different places, aren't we, Dan?
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. It's all going well, though. Both sides going pretty well at the moment. So, yeah, can't complain at all.
Well, I mean, swimming gives you a discipline and a way of dealing with things that you. You're hard pressed to find another sport that will give you that type of benefits if you choose to use them. So, you know, you can build an amazing career because you've just learned so much in your career about, you know, yourself, others, and how to respond to pressures in front of you, you know, the whole idea of self-improvement.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. Right. Final bits for about Swimathon then. I'm going to drum these in so that all of our listeners make sure they sign up. Duncan, what date is Swimathon?
It's the 6th to the 8th of May. So it's that first weekend in May. Unless it's the kind of simple, my swim, my swim or something, where you've got a bigger window.
And where is Swimathon held?
There are 450 pools all around the country, so one round the corner, no getting away.
And how can people get involved most essentially?
The best way is go onto the website, swimathon.org. It's all there. It explains everything that you need to know. And as I was saying earlier, there's training programs, etc. And you know, you can do it individually or as a team. So decide what kind of swimathon you want to do, and how challenging you want to make it, and who you want to be with to enjoy that challenge if you're doing a team.
Definitely. And we will link all of those website links into the description of this podcast, both on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on YouTube. We'll link it everywhere and we'll share it on our social medias as well. Duncan, it's been incredible speaking to you. We're going to sign off with a little outro about Swimathon, but have you got anything more to say?
Well, I think to me, swimming is you know, you talk to any doctor, they say it's the best form of exercise for you, and it's just got so many qualities that help mental health, etc. And I suppose we're all advocates, or can be advocates, for swimming, and it's about, you know, understanding how beautiful the sport is and what it gives to everybody. And tell people, you know, don't be shy to tell people, and you know, don't be too much of a bore about it, but you know, allow them to understand, and educate yourself a bit about what beyond, you know, swimming up and down, having a race, the sport is doing for our communities and the health of the nation, and a lot more.
Perfectly said. This is why your presidency.
Well,
that makes sense
I mean,
now.
It just made me president because they'd like to throw somebody in regularly. I just get told and then thrown.
So a reminder to all of those who want to take on the Swimathon Challenge, it's available at over 450 venues. Take a look at the Swimathon website to find your local venue. And we all know leisure centres have been hugely affected by the pandemic. So by signing up to Swimathon 2022, you are supporting your local pool as £2.50 from every entry goes straight to that venue as well. And on top of that, Swimathon would like to offer all of our listeners an exclusive 50% off all challenges. And all you need to do is use the code PROPULSION22. Duncan, thank you so much for coming on to this week's podcast.
Pleasure, guys. It's a real pleasure.
It's been a lot of fun. We are going to get off this and sign up straight away to our own team competition, and we will keep you updated on our progress.
Looking forward to hearing and see you again soon. Cheers, then.
Yes.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you very much, Duncan. We'll catch you on the next one, guys.
You've been listening to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast with Scott and Dan. We want to thank you for joining us and invite you to subscribe to the show, as well as checking out the Propulsion Swimming YouTube channel for weekly tutorials and videos to get your swimming fix. We will be back next week. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.